Your Dallas Stars finished the regular season the best in the Western Conference. But the work isn't done.
The time has come!
Playoff hockey is here, and we need our loudest and proudest fans at American Airlines Center to help the Dallas Stars fulfill their 2024 Stanley Cup destiny. Tickets are extremely limited for the playoffs, so secure yours at DallasStars.com today.
The time is come!
Behind the net, final seconds, it's over! Game over! Series over! Title defense over! The Stars have dethroned the Knights in seven, and they're moving on!
Welcome to the Podman Rush, the official podcast of the Dallas Stars, presented by Kingsville Brewery. Let's join the rush with your hosts, Daryl Razor Ray and Mike Hyka.
You don't get it by wishing, staring, or hoping. You don't get it easy. You get it by working your ever-living arse off every single shift. And that's exactly what our little Dallas Stars did to dispatch the defending Stanley Cup champions in Game 7 and move on. And that is how we begin the post-opening round Podman Rush. They'll insert some beautiful music and dramatic, maybe drum beats and what have you. But we'll continue on. So Razor Boy, Daryl Ray, along with Mike Hyka.
Hello, people.
There he is, Mr. Inquirer, the man who asks who the starting goaltender is going to be before every morning skate. And he gets that answer.
I do.
Because he's there on that wall, in that seat, in that room for you, the listener, the people. The demand to know. I would tell you this, though. Just listen to me. That's all you need to do, especially this time of year. I am a soothsayer, prognosticator, a prophet, vaticinator, an oracle. I am Razor Domus. Stars in seven is what I said at the beginning of the series. Stars in seven. Laid it out there. Wandered out on that branch, Mike. What happened? Victory lap Monday. That's what happened. How do you want to get into this thing, Michael?
You know what is the one thing that struck me, and this is watching on television as well, is just how different the playoffs are from the regular season. And like you said, every shift, every inch, you really have to fight for it. And this series, I think, showed it more than other series, but it's like you look back at when they were going 16-4 and you're like, oh man, this is a really good team. And none of that mattered at all because that wasn't the same type of game that they're playing right now in the playoffs. And it's wonderful. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Stars won because what?
Depth, I think. The forward depth, both offensively and defensively, outmatched Vegas's forward depth. Which Vegas's forward depth outmatched Dallas last year. That's just the easy thing, you know. Obviously, you know, you don't want to get your captain suspended two games and all that kind of stuff. But that's past history.
Yeah, rear view. Both of them are. It's ironic though, isn't it? That you know, everyone's touting the depth, and yet they lost two forwards in the series. Correct. And had to move it around a little bit. They lost a defenseman immediately, and big Nick Hague, that couldn't have helped. Yeah, I obviously concur that that's probably the most obvious one, and it's been ballyhooed by DeBoer and everybody else. I mean, last year they really struggled with that fourth line for them, and you know, William Karlsson is pretty obvious. William Karlsson took the second most faceoffs for their team in the playoffs last year. And the last time I looked, he was like fifth on their team in this series. Right. Like there's something wrong with them. And look, that's the thing, right? You win a cup, you pour everything, every ounce of everything and the sacrifice and the bark that it strips off the players themselves And then they go nuts all summer long and enjoy it. And then you come back and you're everyone's target again. And I, you know, it's a major reason why the defending Stanley Cup champs have now been vanquished in the opening round in four of the last seven playoff years.
Yeah.
Which is a fairly high number.
Yeah.
In the opening round, like they can't even get through the first round. And I thought the Stars forecheck, especially last night, you know, not to get deep into the F1, F2, F3 and X's and O's, because it doesn't come down to that when teams get to a game seven. It's almost completely about will and bounces and how long you can hang on and whether you're going to get somebody that you don't expect come up with that play or that goal that ultimately wins it for you and you get through. But man, oh man, like the F1, the first forechecker, the guy that goes in there and his purpose is to get on their defense as quick as possible, whoever's going back to get the puck or has the puck, and physically lay a lick on, but don't do it willy-nilly. They have to work in concert. I've always said it's like border collies trying to herd, you know, big sheep or even cattle. And that's what they did marvelously last night. That first forechecker, to me, was one of the most instrumental parts of their win. And both goals they scored in the game came off of forechecking pressure. It was Joe Pavelski just prior to Wyatt Johnston's goal. And then it was that entire fourth line for the Stars. Just what an opening shift to the third period that was. So to me, that was significant. And if you think back to the Stars teams, take out of it the bubble, which was a weirdo show, just with the way it got conducted in that. Go back to when they went to the Cup Final in 99 and won it, and then 2000 and lost in the final. And you know what I think of all the time, Mike? I think of that forecheck. I think of playoff forechecking with those teams. And it was a humongous part of then Hitchcock's system and the horses and the way they played it and the way they would just flood the zone and be all over the opposition with that first and foremost. And then you watch this team in this series and then certainly last night in game seven. And I couldn't stop thinking about that again.
Yeah.
That was, they were so much better than the Golden Knights with it last night. It wasn't the only area, but that area in particular, that's where it started. And maybe it's a little foreshadowing of what's to come.
Well, and the first thing you said, I think, is a good forecheck. So you said grit, hard, work hard, and then also bounces, you know, that's how you score goals. Bounces, just you got to force your good luck. Well, a good forecheck creates all that. It creates buzz. It creates energy in your team. It creates doubt in their team, and it creates bounces. So it's a really good thing. And the second point on this, and I don't know why this one stuck with me, but both Sagan and Duchesne said that they believe Marchment is one of the best F1s in the league during the regular season, and they didn't even have him.
Yeah.
So now you think that's their best maybe forechecker, and he wasn't even there for, you know, the last five games. So if they get him back, you know, who knows where it could go.
Yeah, they may have the rarity of getting healthier as the playoffs move along, which is not the norm. I want to give some love to the 5D men, too. We should probably come up with a name for them. Sounds like a group from the 50s, doesn't it? Oh, hey, Clark, who's five? On stage now? It's the 5D men. Hey.
The Miro Heiskanen five.
Yeah, well, Miro's like two.
Yeah.
And really, those two guys, Tanev and him on the right side, just, you know, eating up extra shifts. I thought all of them, though, like Thomas Harley, he finally picked up a point, I think. I think he had an assist last night, but he didn't have a point in the series, and I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he was terrific. What a, you know, Miro's exceptional, and, you know, to log the time that he did against that club and that pair, and then you get into the second pair with Esa Lindell and Chris Tanev, and essentially they were running, you know, those two pairs, and then they were switching off. Even sometimes I think it was Essa shifting over to the right side and going out there with Ryan Suter, who was coming out of the five hole, and it's a perfect fit for him at this point of his career. And that's the other flip from last year, right? Like the top pair last year was Miro Heiskanen and Ryan Suter. And the top pair this year is Thomas Harley and Miro Heiskanen, and Ryan's coming out of that position down there, you know, hurting defensively, using their sticks, blocking shots, moving the puck, everything that went into it. I felt bad for Nils last night. That's not an easy thing to sit there. I think he had sat on the bench for like 8 minutes, and then he goes out there, and any player that's been in that circumstance, all they want is for nothing to happen.
Right.
Right. Like, they can't really make things happen that much. You can tell yourself to do that, but I mean, leg rigor mortis starts to set in on those guys when they're sitting there for a while, and the game's moving a bazillion miles an hour. And he gets into one of those plays at the blue line where you got to make a decision, and he got sort of chasing two rabbits and ended up getting neither of them. They score a tap-in goal, and that was the end of his game seven. He never got another shift after that, but I felt for him.
Yeah. The fans are always going to ask, why are they doing this? And I asked Pete today. Basically, they trust the five defensemen, but then why do they not go with somebody other than Nils? Because I think Nils is the sixth best defenseman on the team. And if someone got hurt or if there's a need to use Nils, then he's the player they want to use. And now after, and I asked him, I said, after that game last night, how do you prop him back up? And he goes, that's your job. That you're a pro hockey player, and it's the coach's job to get him to where he needs to get to. And you know, we'll see what happens going forward. I don't know if you can use five defensemen against Colorado, but I'm sure that's going to be their first option, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, we'll get into the Avs in a bit. Anything else on why you thought, I mean, obviously Wyatt Johnston too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, man, he outplayed Jack Eichel in the end.
Isn't that
He was
funny?
The most significant Dallas Star. Like, what an incredibly precocious prince of percipience this kid is. How's that for alliteration?
Anxious Anchors plays. he earned all of that praise. And the fact that it, like, he seems to want it. You know, we go back to everybody talking about when he was on Team Canada or whatever, you know, what his greatest strength is. And one is intelligence, obviously, but two is he just wants it more than a lot of other people. And, you know, it's hard to say because everybody should want it. But his play on the ice reflects just how hungry he is to be good at this sport. And the goal itself, I mean, it's just a great mix of speed, intelligence, and then the ability to finish.
Yeah, when he gets it, he's got purpose. You know, there is – he's immediately on the attack. And great anticipation, really competitive, to your point. Just a phenomenal little hockey player, that young lad is. He's going to turn 21 here pretty soon. Oh, man. Unreal. What's he going to be like when he hits his prime?
Hey, it'll be
he's
nice.
Gonna be challenging for MVPs in this league or something. How about winning when down 0-2? Dallas Stars were 0-for-9 in that circumstance. You can go to the old, sooner you fall behind, the more time you have to catch up. I guess they bared that one out. But it's an incredible feat to overcome that. I mean, 87% of the time, every time, teams have not survived that early hole like that. So, I mean, now it's going to be difficult. You know, you win in seven games, win it all after going the distance in the opening round. There have only been 10 teams that have done that in the history of the league. And nobody's done it in a decade. LA was the last team to do it. But when you look at a club that overcame what they just overcame, you're like, well, maybe they are destined to get this thing done.
That was more
significant, though, than I think people recognized.
Oh, 100%. And again, I keep going back to last year's series. I thought the Stars played great in game two, and then obviously mistake late, they lose in overtime, and then maybe it was the way they lost in that one, but like you could just see how much pressure they were under in game three. And so then to come in and then go on the road, and maybe that was a good thing, just go on the road and then take care of business in game three, then take care of business in game four, and then even to lose game six and come back and take care of business in game seven. It's like there's something here that they learned in that whole process of losing last year. They seem to be a deeper team and a calmer team. And, you know, we'll see if that continues.
TCOB, man.
There you go.
Elvis,
right?
Yeah. In Vegas.
Care of business. Yeah.
Arriva Las Vegas. You mentioned losing game six. That's the key to game seven success.
No.
There are two keys. Have Pete DeBoer behind your bench and lose game six. Stars are now 4-1 in game seven when they lose game six.
Interesting.
The only time that it didn't work out, do you remember?
Kari?
No.
That was not? Oh, when they actually...
No, he won game six.
He won game six.
Remember,
okay,
he stood on his
confused.
Head, stood on he the
did,
line.
That's what
at
I'm
the...
saying, and then flipped the script in game seven.
Same two teams, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember 2019? They lose 4-1 at home.
That's right.
I think, was that an afternoon game, too? Remember Ben Bishop got nailed in the shoulder? There was a big concern that he wouldn't even play game seven.
Yeah.
In St. Louis. Rope Hintz blocked a shot. He was all hobbled and everything. And it took double overtime in game seven for the Stars to lose that one. Otherwise, they would be a pristine 5-0 in game sevens when losing game six.
Interesting.
How about that nugget? I'm full of them today.
Deep.
Look at me.
You're full.
Look at me. Huh? Just getting rid of everything. That's what is that counterintuitive when you have to lose in order to win?
Sure.
Something like that? I don't know. I'm making stuff on the fly here. What'd you think about maybe the most cliche of game seven outcomes playing out again last night, where it's always either a depth guy or a glue guy or a blue collar guy that scores that goal that ultimately triumphs and moves you to the next round?
It's amazing. And again, it goes to the fact, like you said, everybody is looking at the other team's best players and just locking down on them. So then when these guys get a chance, you know, it's great. I mean, the Mike Keane game to me was the most fantastic example of all of that, that, you know, here's a guy who goes against his old buddy in the goal. And I mean, back in the day, I don't know, it just seemed like Cowboys 49ers when the Stars and Avalanche played. And, you know, for again, a role player like that to come up huge in that game. And then the same thing with Radek after sitting. And, you know, but the only practice he had was mini sticks with his kids. So,
yeah. Well, you have that one and you have, like, even Wyatt Johnston scoring that goal in game seven last year against Seattle, like, you know, he was a newbie. He wasn't really producing all that much. You don't expect that guy, you know, barely out of his teens to be a difference maker in a game like that when you have all these veterans all through your lineup. And then there it is.
Yep.
Even the Bruins win over the Leafs in overtime, like, would you have really picked that guy? Maybe because of what had gone on, but he'd been so quiet all series long. Yeah. You're expecting somebody else. They do get a tying goal, though, from essentially a defensive defenseman. Like, there's so much canceling each other off it at the top of your rosters in that it just filters down. You're like, okay, well, where's the fissure? Where's the crack? Where's this going to happen? And Radek just getting back into the series. And I know Mark, your buddy, or my buddy, Mark Janko has always backed him and said, like, that's a guy that should stay here for circumstances like that. I mean, I mentioned it last night. He, He has a game that's built more for the playoffs. Certainly nowadays, it's more than ever than it is the regular season where, you know, it's speed and it's skill and it's this and it's that. And he's got an old school game where it's like find a way or make a way, tight quarters, you know, heavy. And yeah, you have to get a bounce. That's the other part of it. You need fortune. And they got both last night.
This is not against Ty at all, but, you know, there were some fans, obviously, who were upset that Ty got pulled for game seven. And I looked up the numbers. Raddick weighs 25 pounds more than Ty Dellandrea. 25 pounds. That's a lot. And then his face-offs are, I think, third or fourth best on the team at 53, 54% Raddick's are. And so you look at those and you're going like, okay, I get it. You know, you want that. You want the face-off wins and you want that weight against Las Vegas. And it, you know, proved to work out for him.
Yeah, man. I can't get over Wyatt, though. He had a half a dozen hits in the game. He was like a power forward all of a sudden. Oh, he's something else. So they oust what really, to me, was a true defending cup champ.
Yes.
You know, like 90% of last year's team returned. You don't usually get that in today's NHL. And I know they're bunch of people continually poo-pooing about them adding players and injured players and everything else. But, you know, their brass used the current cap rules to what they thought was their advantage.
Yeah.
And Picasso said it way back in the days, you know, learn the rules as a pro so you can break them as an artist. And the rules are the rules. And
yeah.
And they followed him, but in the end, you can do that. They reminded me so much of what went on with the New York Rangers last year, where you're trying to just toss the ingredients in a bowl, you know, relatively late in the season. You might have had a good thing going already, and then you're trying to fit all these different ingredients together. And Bruce Cassidy seemed like he was just searching the whole series, trying to find the right mix. They could never get hurt. I mean, the guys that you were concerned with that they added, Tomáš Hertl, Mark Stone, and Alex Pietrangelo, who were all, you know, unavailable and all of them injured. But one was a appendix issue, a spleen. Hertl's was a knee, I think, even before they traded for him. And he was out for a while. Man, all three of them were at times god-awful in the series and added very little to their side. So I remember, what was it? Tarasenko and Pat Kane went to the New York Rangers last year. And it was just, again, it was like,
too much.
You know, they already had pieces that fit. And they trying to work them in. Where does this work? And you're trying to do it on the fly. And I think they did the exact same thing that the Golden Knights did, right? Won the first two games on the road in that series against New Jersey and then lost the series.
Yeah. It's interesting because even Cassie last night was kind of searching for answers. And he looked at those injured players and said, if we could have had them for 15, 20 games, you know, he goes, he honestly believes it would have been a different outcome. And, you know, that also falls to their strategy is, well, you can't have them because we need the LTIR to add these other players. And so the key for them, I think, is not hitting in the eighth hole. Like if they could have come in the, you know, five or the four or whatever, you know, and been better during the regular season, then still rested their LTIR players and then had a chance maybe to. But, I mean, I got to say, this is a really good Dallas Stars team. And we've seen a bunch of them. And there's not a whole lot of holes in this group. And so for Vegas to push them as far as they did, even with whatever issues they had, that was a good performance by a really good team. And it was a great series. But, you know, I think Dallas earned the win and, you know, everybody's happy for that.
Well, again, that's why I went all Razor Domus at the beginning of the series. And some people, I think, thought I was nuts. But, you know, because of what they had added and what they looked like on paper. But I was like, man, I would want that team in the first round. I would not want them in the second or third round.
Correct.
When guys start to maybe get their game back up to speed, those that hadn't played, maybe they have more things figured out. You know, get them when they're still a work in progress, if you will. And And they did. And even with that, I mean, it took bounces and everything they had to get through them and move on to the next round. It's tough to make a defending cup champ go home, but it's becoming more habitual, it feels like. Yeah. Isn't that a strange thing? It's like a bit of a paradox, Mike.
It is that. But there are explanations for it. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, there is a hangover. And whether that's from too much partying or everybody trying to beat you, you know, in 82 games, there is a toll. Hey, winning hurts, Daryl.
That was your slogan last year.
I know it was. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, it makes a little bit of sense that there's going to be some pain even when you win.
Yeah. Takes a toll. Takes a toll. And the Stars, you make a good point. Like, enough about them. Like, even with everything, even if they had been a little more up to speed, I don't know that the Stars would not have gotten through them. There's, you know, along with maybe injuries and guys playing through stuff or just overall enervation and weariness, there's a difference between guys that are a little bit full, who have their name on the cup and who've won and all that, and guys who are pursuing that and will gnaw your arm off to win a game, right? And that can be the difference between these evenly matched clubs, and they were certainly evenly matched in that series. There were two penalties, one aside in game seven. Neither of them needed to be called. Both of them were charlatan. They really were. I mean, the guy just got touched and fell down both ways. Love you, Robo, but that's exactly what happened. And then it was just, and the ironic part of that was both power plays were just rancid when they got on it. Like, terrible. The Stars had a power play in game seven, 4 minutes in. And I think there were three, maybe four faceoffs in their own zone. When's the last time you've ever seen that from a Stars power play?
I could be wrong, but I think they got outshot 3-0.
I'm sure they did.
You know, because sure I think there were three shorthanded shots against and none for the Stars.
And then there were no power plays. And then all of a sudden, Jake Oettinger, for just putting his blocker up and kind of protecting himself. And was it Marchessault that fell down? Is that who it was on their side?
I can't remember.
I don't even remember who it was.
I remember Hurdle being around the net. Yeah, but
he just falls down and the arm goes up and they're on the power. And then they were just god awful with their power play. So I guess I saw something this morning saying, which is very interesting going forward, Mike, to steal a parlance from you, that the league is going to probably watch and maybe clamp down a little bit more on embellishment going forward. And look, you're up against a fairly wicked power play in the Colorado Avalanche. In this next round. So it might be something to keep an eye on. And you want to move forward to that now? Why don't we?
Okay.
I think anything else from this series that you would like to chime in about?
I mean, Jake, obviously, the fact that he has been so honest with us, because, you know, a lot of times he brings it up just about how emotional this year has been for him. The fact that he is really playing great hockey, and we've said that before, I mean, because this is a good team. If he's on top of his game, and he said it, if he plays well, they have a chance to win it all. And he did, and it's just the first part of it, but boy, that was a really nice first step for him.
Yeah, he's putting together a fine little resume for game sevens. And, you know, it's becoming more than just a small sample size too. I mean, what did they get out? What was it, like 67-28 in that game seven against Calgary?
Oh,
it's amazing. Like, it was 67-28. Those were the shots on goal.
And then
goal.
The goal that scored, like the one goal that got through, 99 out of 100 times that puck doesn't go in.
Yeah, the puck had to morph in order to get through that window. I know. And then he did not have a lot to do. You can say this. He did not have a lot to do with the win in game seven over Seattle. They played just smothering defense in front of him. But at the same time, It's not like they scored four goals.
No.
You know, the margin for error is basically zero. And last night, maybe a little motivation. Then I don't even know. Does he watch other games? I haven't asked him.
I don't think he does, to tell you the truth.
I'm just thinking Swayman was so good for Boston, another fellow American. I wonder whether he was like, okay, maybe I'll throw that at
maybe
the Golden Knights in game seven. And he could have, probably should have shut him out. But now he has that performance last night, and especially late. I love goaltenders always have, Grant Fuhr, who I backed up in Edmonton, and one of the greatest goaltenders in the history of the league. One of his great attributes, and he would give up a goal every now and then, and you're like, really? But when the game was on the line, whether it was, 2-1 or 5-5.
Yeah.
He always seemed to come up with that clutch stop to make sure that they won the hockey game. Game on the line. I mean, there's nothing better at that position than having that. And Jake seems to have a little bit of that, just look at the wins in the series. Even go back to game three. They might not have even gotten to overtime without a couple saves in the, waning embers of regulation before Wyatt scores. So, yeah, if he continues this on, they're going to go deep because he looks great. He really does. And looks like he's getting better. I think the coaches said that as the series moved along. Like, he didn't have the greatest start to the series, although it was goofy. Like, what did he have, 15 shots in the first game? And that's not how you want to enter a series. Yeah. You need a little bit of work. You want to feel it. Get some rhythm going. He had no rhythm. And then once he got going, man, he was dancing. Yeah. And the rest of them, if just a good team. Yeah. And they're up against a very good team that is exceptionally rested. Yeah. And a different animal, right? Completely. Yes, not a completely different challenge, but a big switch in the challenge they're going to deal with.
It seems like Dallas and Vegas like to play a similar style game.
Yeah.
It seems like Dallas and Colorado
sorry,
do
Mike,
not like to play. Go.
Sorry, Mike. Yeah, similar styles and yet completely different ways that they defended in their own zone. Correct. One was sort of a hybrid man-on-man. I don't even know what they call it, the Stars play, but they expect to get numbers around the puck and win it that way. And the Golden Knights play a zone. And, man, it can be as tight as any defensive zone structure in the league when they're on it with interchanges between forwards and defensemen. The defense are basically dog-fenced at the circles, at the hash marks, and they are always in position to defend the front of their net. And the forwards do some work in switches centers more than anybody else. Yep. And with the Stars, they ask at times forwards to play almost like a defenseman. How about that block by – I thought Jason Robertson was great in that regard last night.
Yes.
Your best offensive player made a few of the best defensive plays in the game.
Yep.
So anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
It will be a different animal.
Yeah. The Stars in Vegas, to me, are also really good with detail, sticks on the ice, sticks in the lanes, little things that slow the game down or make it a little bit more clunky. And the Avalanche, they don't care. They'll make a mistake and give you the puck just so they can go get it back and go make another run. So that's the way the games I've seen that Colorado plays. They're a lot more loosey-goosey, so to speak.
Yeah, two of the league's best offenses are going to clash in this one.
Yeah,
and that might be delicious for us. You know how every lead felt safe in the Stars Knights series? No lead will be safe in this one. None. They proved that in the regular season. Although, you bring up the regular season, I don't know how much that plays into playoff hockey. I really don't.
Yeah.
We've seen it where teams look like they have another club's number and then to get into the playoffs and it doesn't really follow through in the same vein. Jake Oettinger will likely have to have a lot more to do with outcomes in this series. Not that he wasn't in that series, obviously, but this is just different, right? Yeah. And you're dealing on the road in mile high air and the best home team. It's a matchup of the best home team against the best road team.
There's so many things in the series that are going to be fun. Does that make the first two games in Dallas even more important? Or is it just there's really no way to quantify all this stuff?
I don't know. I think every minute of every game is important.
Yeah.
But Jake's going to have to outplay Georgiev. And he's been radical. You know, you don't know really what you're going to get. He was great. At times he was a sieve and played a ton of games in the regular season, but he's received a lot of days off, I would suspect, since they got rid of the Winnipeg Jets. So that'll be fun to watch. Stars Avs, of course, have this deep, rich playoff history past. Stars have gotten through Colorado in seven games in all three of their trips to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah. And three of the greatest
games.
As the Dallas Stars. Three of the greatest games I think I can ever remember. Like the Keene game, the Zubov game, and the Kivi Ron. Just for memories, not the actual, but to one, the first time beat Colorado and now advance to the Stanley Cup final. And then the second one with the follow-up, and then the Kivi Ranta game. I'm sitting on my couch watching a game thousands of miles away, and it was electric. It was amazing. And then the play, who was it who passed it to him from behind the net?
Sekarash.
Sekarash. One of the defensemen go behind the net to find Kivi Ranta in front to win win game seven in overtime. That's amazing for a hat trick.
I think it was the first time that he had gone past the top of the circles in the series. He's behind the net.
It was a great play.
Yeah. I concur, glad it happened in that. Still struggle with the whole bubble thing. Yeah. You know, don't let the facts get in the way of a great story. And it is. It's an incredible story. And they're going to have to go straight up against Kivi Ranta in this series. He's on the other side. But the idea that would have transpired in Denver, because that was a road game for the Stars, right? They had they had game seven at home in an empty building in Edmonton. Like, talk about a bizarre world that was. And this, the nature of the series, they had really poor goaltending at times, and they were down. Were they on their third goalie?
I think so, yeah.
And yet the Canucks are down to their third goalie, and they got through Nashville in this series. But just the idea that would have gone on at what would have been, I think, the Pepsi Center still. Maybe it was Ball Arena by then. But in Denver, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it would have happened, but it did happen, as we called it from a room surrounded by plexiglass in Las Colinas.
Were they having like college football scores flying in that day or whatever?
I don't even know. I'm trying to scrub the whole thing from my memory. But if you go back to 99 and 2000,
yes,
those were incredible series between the two franchises. We're skipping over some other ones because the Stars lost.
Yeah,
you know, David Abashir won a series. And I think Jose Theodore was the other goalie that won a series for Colorado against the Stars. Anyway, lots of time to pick that one apart. It should look, the modern one is the only one that really matters. And that is upcoming, starting immediately. And they're going every other day. Yeah. That one starts on Tuesday. And I think it's just a fantastic gauntlet that they ask every team that wins the Stanley Cup to get through. And for the Stars, even just the opening two rounds of this thing, where you have to some way, somehow find a way, make a way to get past the defending cup champs who are fully loaded, maybe not fully healthy, but fully loaded and all that experience. And then as soon as you get through them, you get the team that won it the previous year and who were rocking along and clobbered the best defensive team in the league in the Winnipeg Jets and are going to be rested. And I know I speak for every Stars fan who hopes they will also be rusty.
Yes, agreed.
All right. Here we go.
Columbo,
if you want.
Want my Columbo question? God.
You and your awkward Columbo. Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Here we go.
Two words. Val Nichushkin.
Oh, I know.
They paid him money to go away. That's how bad they wanted to get rid of him. Think of that story. They bought him out. He scored no goals in 50-something games. And now he might be... Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he'll be a... No, it's a good Columbo out of you. It'll be a major storyline. You know, whatever went on last year in Seattle when he was ushered out of there and, you know, didn't even finish the series and... There was, it was just, again, it was, what went on, the facts have not seeped out of that thing, but he came back this year and was phenomenal in the regular season. I've used phenomenal a lot today. It was sensational, let's say. Had an unbelievable first round. He was just like he was when he was a rookie, just a man child out there. How do you handle that? The problem with him with the Stars was he wasn't mature enough to handle what was going on. It was just awkward all over the map.
Yes, it was. And I think he's told them that he almost needed to be traded to grow up.
I think if you looked at it, and this is a very superficial view of it, but you'd be like, obviously it was the right pick. Yes. Right. When you look at the player now and you look at what he's done and how he looks in the league, you're like, yeah, duh, that was a great pick. The management of him for reasons that were almost out of the Stars' control was something else, though.
Yeah.
You couldn't develop him. He always had the option to go back and again, he was just an immature athlete thrown in there, probably ahead of his time. And that the year that before they bought him out, I mean, there'll never be another player that does what he did. I don't think where you go that long, it was a shortened season. What was it? Yeah. How many games did you say?
54, 56, something like that.
Yeah. 56 games, didn't score a goal, didn't take a penalty.
Yeah.
You weren't mad that you're not scoring. Like you didn't go in and run over a goaltender at some point. but anyway, it's rich with storylines.
You got a ton of them.
You got three or four. Yeah, Cogliano, Kiviranta, and him. You know, like you got a lot going on there.
It's like brothers going against brothers in a lot of sense.
Yeah,
so it'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's all we in the media want, right, Mike? We just want easy storylines.
Yes.
And we just had maybe the easiest one with Pete and Spotter and everybody going back against them for a second straight series against that team and that franchise. And this year, they had the secret weapon, right? Mischa Donskoy.
Yeah, there you go. You said it at the beginning.
Yeah. He's the secret weapon. I asked Pete about it. He was, again, Mischa was the assistant to Cassidy last year. And DeBoer said it's similar to him knowing me and what we do this year. It's the info on Cassidy and what they really like to do and what they think they can get against the Stars. And who knows? I mean... It's in tight series, everything matters. Everything matters.
Yes. He can become the Patrick Maroon of coaches.
Yeah. Yes.
He'll just bounce from team to team.
Anyway, happy for all of them. And
yes.
And hopefully we're having a happy conversation after whatever goes on in the second round and see if the Stars can get themselves back-to-back-to-back Western Conference finals and maybe a little bit deeper. and getting way ahead of ourselves. Maybe we can see that glory matchup of DeBoer and Paul Maurice in the final with the Stars and the Swamp Cats for the Cup.
That would be fun.
I know. All right. Till then, thank you all out there. We won't talk to you until this one's done. We're way too busy covering all these storylines that we just spoke of. So for Mike Hyka, I'm Daryl Ray. This is the Podman Rush, and we out.
You've been on the Podman Rush with Razor Ray and Mike Hyka, presented by Kingsville Brewery, an official production of the Dallas Stars. To stay up to date on all things Texas hockey, visit DallasStars.com or download the official Dallas Stars app today.
Bye, Tom.
See you, Tom. He doesn't even pay attention anymore.
No, he's
scouting.
He's got a draft.
He's busy scouting.
Your Dallas Stars finished the regular season the best in the Western Conference. But the work isn't done.
The time has come.
Playoff hockey is here, and we need our loudest and proudest fans at American Airlines Center to help the Dallas Stars fulfill their 2024 Stanley Cup destiny. Tickets are extremely limited for the playoffs, so secure yours at DallasStars.com today.